health is wealth, and this is where we're going to talk about it. The Small Conversations for a Better World podcast with hosts Jillian McCormick and Susanna Steers. This podcast represents the opinions of the hosts and or their guests to the show. The content is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice nor established legal standard of care. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Small Conversations for a Better World podcast. I'm Susanna Steers.
And I'm Jillian McCormick. Back in the summer of 2020, we noticed an Instagram campaign from the BC Centers for Disease Control Foundation. It was about the social determinants of health. The social determinants of health are economic and social conditions that influence individual and group differences in health status. And I find them fascinating. Also, I have a lot of questions and feelings about these things. Like, I get a bit frustrated and a bit angry because it makes it seem like a lot of things are out of our control, preordained, which is against everything that I believe about health. I believe we can work every day toward optimal health. But what if all my efforts will be thwarted by the fact of my birth? And admittedly, when I look at the list of 17 Canadian social determinants of health, all I can see is how privileged I am. I am white, able-bodied, cisgendered, born to educated parents who educated me. They had stable jobs with arguably excellent working conditions and a ton of job security. I've been educated and I have a profession with adequate, stable income and a reasonable job security. If I cannot work, I have access to unemployment, and I enjoy an incredible social network of support that I have called upon quite a few times in the last several years. I could go on, but suffice it to say that I have a bounty when it comes to the social determinants of health. And that said, I am not a paragon of health. I struggle with my own issues just like all humans. So I wanted to know what the social determinants of health actually mean. What do we have control over? How impactful are these determinants of health? And do we need to care about them as a community? How do these factors give context to the issues of the day? Those of the cries of systemic racism, the inordinate amount of deaths that we've seen in marginalized populations related to COVID-19 infections, the way women are found more often in the front lines of this global pandemic than men. Okay, so I had a lot of questions. So I reached out to the organization that created the Instagram feed that so fascinated me. And here to answer my questions today is the executive director of the BC CDC Foundation for Public Health, Christy Kerr.
Christy Kerr is the executive director of the BC CDC Foundation. She believes that our best way forward to create a truly healthy society is to increase public health awareness and investment, and she's leading the foundation with these goals in mind. Passionate about health promotion, prevention, health equity, and the social determinants of health, Christy believes we need to shift our focus to upstream actions. Now, Christy, we know that this year has been quite busy for the CDC, and we assume that the foundation is not exempt from that. So we are so grateful that you could take time with us today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here. I love talking about these things, and I'm just so excited that you want to talk about them too.
So, Christy, in our inaugural episode that was released in January of 2020, January of this year, we interviewed Dr. David Patrick, who at the time was the executive lead of the BC CDC. And when we look back on this episode, we were so innocent and naive, weren't we, Sue?
No kidding.
I've literally kicked myself for not focusing more on the reasons why having a CDC is so important and how it impacts the daily lives of all Canadians and, you know, globally. Even though we spoke of it, we still didn't really get it, you know, hindsight and all of that. When we interviewed him, it was the fall of 2019 and a global pandemic was on the mind of almost no one. Now it is really clear what the CDC is for and how they impact us every day. So what is the CDC Foundation for or public health. Can you tell us about that? I'm going to say that one more time. What is the CDC Foundation for Public Health? Tell us about that.
Okay, happy to. So the BC CDC Foundation for Public Health is a registered charity, and we work in partnership with the BC Centre for Disease Control, which you just described, the very important role of as our provincial government public health agency in the province. We work with the BC Centre for Disease Control and other stakeholders to improve public health outcomes in BC, and we lead public health initiatives, and we fund evidence-based projects and research. We also raise awareness and shine a light on the importance of public health and the need for public health investment, which I think is pretty clear to the world over right now with what we're going through with COVID-19. We are an independent organization from the BC CDC, but we work very closely as partners with the same goal of improving public health. And we're a pretty small organization, but I feel that we're having a very big impact on public health by bringing initiatives that matter to communities.
On the website associated with the foundation, I found references to Activate Health, and I want to read something that I found there. It says, individual actions can have a population impact. By working together to shift how we see health and how we engage with our healthcare system, we can protect the health of our communities now and for future generations. This is our battle cry. And I have to say, Jillian and I are 100% behind this message. The whole idea of the Small Conversations for a Better World podcast was that those small conversations that are seemingly insignificant are the things that allow us to change the tide, to change someone's mind, and to change behavior. And I'm thinking maybe we're on a similar mission here. Can you tell us a little more about Activate Health and what's going on right now?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think we are on a similar mission here. Activate Health is it's a campaign. It's a small campaign that we launched in the summer of 2019, well before, like you said earlier, that we were even thinking about a global pandemic or what might be facing us. And it really comes from my kind of belief and desire to shift the way that we think about health and really shift that conversation. I think it really needs to start with a conversation and raising awareness around that. And I mean, right now, little did we know when we launched this campaign that we would have such a obvious example of it in COVID-19. But really, it's, you know, our individual actions can have that population level impact. And I believe that by focusing on population health, and I know we're going to get into what that means in the social determinants, because I know that you're very interested in that. But I do believe that if we start to think about population health, that we will ultimately be able to shift our sort of lens of health and kind of move more upstream. And in doing so, we will also remove the burden on our healthcare system. And we can get more into that. I can explain what I mean by that. But Activate Health is really still quite a small campaign, but we're starting to see, and you two are a perfect example. It's starting to speak to people, and I'm really jazzed by it.
I love it. Well, I would love to know what in your background, what drew you to this, and what makes you the perfect candidate right now? I mean, you're taking the helm of an organization that's doing some really important work. How did you get here?
Well, it's probably too long of a story to actually get into all the details, but and I don't know that I'm the perfect person to be running this organization, but I do think that I am in a good position to be running this organization, and I have been doing so for a number of years. We only actually have become quite public facing in the last couple of years, but there's a lot of work behind the scenes that went into getting us to where we are now. And my background is, I have a science degree, and then I have a master's in public health, and my specialization is health promotion, which really has a sort of equity at its core. And so I was actually working at the BC CDC in a more academic position. And the foundation was sort of just starting to get off the ground, and I was hired as the first employee to basically figure it out, go build this thing.
That's great.
Yeah. So, and then just my own sort of experience, I spent time working in Zambia and Kenya as well, doing international development, but really focusing at the local capacity building level. And doing that work was just extremely eye-opening for me. And I started to really get a better sense of what health actually means and the importance of, like I said, you know, focusing on population level. And that's not to say, that's not at the expense of individual health. Of course, that's very important. But I think shifting the tide in creating healthy societies is really sort of how I see where we're going to move forward and into a healthier future.
Is there a personal connection for you that kind of drives your desire to do this work?
There are a few personal connections. I mean, for me, when I went into public health and I discovered health promotion as a discipline or as a field, it just resonated with me. I just went, oh, this is it. This is the thing that I'm supposed to be doing. And I actually, again, it's a long story, but I chose that path as opposed to medicine. And now looking back, I just think, well, that, yes, I'm so glad that I did that. I also, one of the areas that we work in, so right now, COVID-19, of course, is taking up a significant amount of our time. We were one of the first charities in Canada actually to launch a fundraising and communications. Actually, I took a two-pronged approach, but this was back in January. But one of the really other important areas that we're working on is the overdose crisis. And so we're really working at the intersection of two public health emergencies right now. And the overdose crisis does have a personal connection for me. I've lost somebody to overdose, and it's solvable. We have the solutions, and it's just very important to me that I have whatever role it is, whether it's a small role in solving that, but that is just extremely important to me. So that's a really specific example, but I think we can do better.
Yeah. Yes. Those things that drive us. Is there something specific that you would like to achieve as the executive director of the foundation?
Well, that's a really good question. My team is, they encourage me so much to celebrate successes. I get so focused and do more, grow more, take on more, all these things. And I've been thinking a lot lately about what, you know, what is the future of this organization? And we have, I mean, it's strange to say, but because of our role in public health, we've actually had a lot of success around fundraising and people, you know, the knowledge translation work that we're doing around COVID-19. And so it seems a little bit weird to say that because, of course, we're all experiencing this terrible time with the global pandemic, but my organization is actually doing well and we're doing really, really good work coming out of that.
You know, from the public facing side, like I feel like the CDC and by extension, the Foundation for Public Health have blown the doors off this thing. Like you've been incredibly successful at, yes, giving knowledge to the public, showing them where to go every day, talking to them about how to protect themselves and their loved ones. Like, I think it's been incredible right from the start.
And counteracting misinformation as well.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. We actually just, maybe you saw, we had two blog posts in our last newsletter and then just posted this week about misinformation because it's contributing in a really, really, really negative way to what's happening with COVID-19. And I think that the BCCDC Foundation is in such a unique position because we sort of straddle or bridge the academic world and the public world. And I think that we're able to sort of cross-pollinate in unique ways. And I think it's an incredible opportunity for us to fill a role that supports public health awareness and investment. And then perhaps as we grow, we're still pretty small, but as we grow, I would really like to help kind of guide the health of our province moving forward.
Oh, I love that. We need a guide. So you talked about COVID. Has the pandemic really impacted what's going on at the Foundation for Public Health?
It really has. I mean, like I said, we started talking about it in December. My team started asking me, what do you think this is going to turn into something? And I naively said, I think so, or I'm pretty sure, but you know, probably like SARS. Little did I know, nothing really like that. And so we very quickly launched, like I said, a two-pronged approach and our emergency response fund, and then doing our communications work, really trying to help create digestible resources for everyone. There's so much information out there. Like you said, a lot of it's mis or disinformation, and a lot of it's just technical and it's hard to navigate. And so I just really wanted to use my public health knowledge to be able to try to help in that way. And we have raised to date over $400,000 since February. And we were able
since February.
Yes. We are and our partners have just like been absolutely incredible and completely stepped up. New donors, people who had never even heard of us, are supporting us. And it's just been absolutely incredible and heartwarming in so many ways. We've had kids donate to us. We had a $3 donation from a young boy. I think he was 10. And the message was, I might be mixing up my stories here, but the message was that he wanted to give back so that he could keep his grandparents safe from COVID.
Did you cry?
You know what? I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm about to. So.
Yeah. So it's really, don't get me wrong. It's been very busy, but for the first time in my career, we were able to raise enough money within a couple of months to fund a significant pandemic response project. And that rapid real-time kind of work is rare, to be quite frank. And it just felt so good to be able to say, we're giving you, you know, money to do this. And the COVID-19 speak survey, which was in May, I'm not sure if you recall that, but we were able to fund that work and some subsequent work that's coming out of that. And that work is really what's helping our public health leaders, Dr. Bonnie Henry, her team, Dr. Ray Gustafson, who's the head of the BCCDC. It's really helping them guide their decisions and know sort of what information is important and, you know, the restrictions, all the things that we're seeing. So it's been incredible.
So this Instagram campaign in the summer that got me all up in arms, let's dig into that a little bit. So when I saw it, I thought a couple of things. And one was that it was really good in a social media sense. It was super engaging, gorgeous photos. So kudos on the social media front.
Thank you.
What was your goal with that campaign and how was it received?
So the goal with that, we actually did... So one of the other things that I think we started this last year, I don't know, time is just a bit of a blur right now, but I really wanted to start a series where we talked about public health concepts. I think this, you know, public health is very broad and very nebulous, and a lot of people don't really understand what it is or what we do, and really it touches everything. So I wanted to start to break down some of the concepts. And so we started a series called Decoding Public Health. And we just started talking about like the social determinants of health is one, health equity, prevention, health promotion, just really trying to raise awareness about sort of those high level concepts. What does all that mean? Why do we care? Why should we care? Why should you care? Those sorts of things. And so I really appreciate that you came across that and that you liked it. And that is thanks to my team. I mean, we're small. There's only four of us. I think we're putting out a lot more than people realize our actual capacity.
Wow.
But that's thanks to my team. I have a really, really dedicated team. And so that social media, the pictures, all of that is thanks to my team.
Well, good teams they have good leaders. Oh, so keep that in mind. So what are the Canadian social determinants of health?
Well, I think, like you said at the beginning, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, I came up with, well, first it was like 14 and then 15, and like the latest count I looked at was 17. So it's growing. I don't think we need to list them, but like pick out a few that are like, we don't have to list them all. How about that?
No, and I wouldn't probably be able to list them all by rote because, like you said, the list is growing. I think when I first started learning about this, the list was shorter. But you know, some of the key ones that I think your listeners would probably be familiar with: income, education, racism. You know, a lot of talk about systemic racism lately, which is fantastic. We need to be talking about it. We need to do more than talk about it. Gender is one as well. Mm-hmm. And so really what they are sort of the system structures and the forces that are working around us, where we live, work, play, have our social connections, where we grow older, really all the non-medical or non-biological factors that shape us. And these play a significant role in our health outcomes.
How were they identified as determinants? Like, talk to me about like the evidence, I suppose. If you can.
I will do my best. Honestly, I believe the connections between living conditions and health go back a long way. I wouldn't be able to tell you sort of who the founding fathers, for lack of a better word, are.
They probably were fathers at that time. Yeah.
I'm sure they were men back to the 1800s. But so I think the current kind of focus and where the evidence really started to grow is in the early 2000s. And in 2005, the World Health Organization formed a commission. I think it was called the Commission on Social Determinants. And that was led by Sir Michael Marmot. And he's a leader in this work and has been for many decades, I think. It's
really recent.
Yes. It's old and new, I guess, in a sense. That I think we knew that this made sense. It makes sense, right? But living conditions would connect with health and health outcomes. But I'm not sure that it was really sort of formalized or research really started until within the last 20 years. And now I'm certainly not an expert on the history of all of this. So I'm sure there's experts out there who could give you a better historical account than I. But there has been and continues to be much research into the impacts. And like you said, the list has expanded.
Right.
We've gained kind of more knowledge and understanding of how the world around us really, really shapes us.
Really shapes us. So just if you're listening and, you know, we've talked about income and education and, you know, some of those things, but also housing is on this list. Geography is on this list. Where you geographically live impacts your health. Think about that. Immigration. Are you an immigrant? Food security. Early childhood development. Like, do you get tingles when you hear this list? Because I really do. It's a big deal. But what I want to know is, does a physician think it's a big deal? Like, do they pay attention to social determinants of health?
I mean, that's an excellent question. And I guess my answer would be, I sure hope so. I'm not a physician, so I can't speak fully to how a physician incorporates some of this into their work or into their practice. But I think that they definitely should care about all the determinants. The biological and medical ones, of course, factor in as well. But the social factors are such a significant contributor to health outcomes. So a doctor with a dedication to their patients should be able to work within a system that allows them to focus on the bigger picture. I'm afraid that's not quite how our system operates, though. And I think that's a challenge. And I imagine it's probably a challenge and a frustration for many doctors.
Okay, so I think we need to pick apart that statement. A doctor who cares about their patients, and they all do. What did you say? It was like they should have the ability to treat their patients within a social system, and that's not how our system works. Can you say more about that?
So the way I see it is, well, there's a few different things. I don't think that we necessarily have a healthcare system. I think we have a sick care system. And we focus very much on, I mean, I should preface this by saying we're very lucky in Canada to have a good system. None of what I am saying here is meant to go against any of that. We have resources to care for people. And that's of course very important, and but it's vital. However, in our healthcare system, we think about the sick, we think about the injured, the vulnerable, and we don't tend to create or foster a system where we think about creating health and positive health, and it doesn't tend to be very holistic. And so what I think we need to really think about in, you know, our health system is that we try to focus on health and social support and protection and security. And really it's about aiming for well-being kind of across all parameters of life. And I don't believe in our current system that doctors have the capacity to be able to do that. And now we are starting to move towards primary care, which is a really good good step forward, and it is important. I think that we can create sort of more holistic system in that sense, but it is still about solving things after they've happened. And I guess my view, if that makes sense, my view is just really trying to focus upstream, and let's address the root causes. Let's focus on prevention. Let's do the things that we can do. We can't do everything. We can't stop everything. That's, you know, that would be completely impossible, but we can do a lot more to stop more things from happening, preventing injury and illness, and really focusing on health promotion to keep people healthy, as opposed to having to sort of treat and repair once problems have already started.
I was just thinking as you were speaking, Christy, we spoke in our first season early in 2020 to a physician here in North Vancouver, Dr. Dedisha Holowenko, and she actually described some of the difficulties that you mentioned. She's trying to do more of a women's health practice and, sort of feels a little hamstrung sometimes in that she can't do some of the things that she would like to do to promote wellness, as opposed to dealing just with the sick, just exactly the way you describe it. So I think sometimes the physicians are as frustrated as the rest of us.
Right. I can imagine so. I think that, you know, their hands are tied in a lot of ways based on just sort of how the system works, and they're a very important part of that system. And, you know, I work with some amazing doctors, and I think that we can do a lot more, and that if we can sort of renavigate our system a little bit and give doctors sort of some more breathing room in a sense to do more, that they would be able to do more.
So that begs the question, what do you think that would take to give the doctors more breathing room?
Currently, right now, or typically, less than 5% of our healthcare funding goes to public health prevention, health promotion, which really underlies the importance of having a proactive and well-funded approach to public health. We're seeing that, of course, right now with COVID-19. It is demonstrating that for us. And the way I see it is that if 95% of our funding in our healthcare system in BC is going into acute care, if we just flipped some of that around and we put more emphasis and more investment into prevention and health promotion, working upstream, then I strongly believe that we actually wouldn't need as much for acute care, because we would be relieving the burden on the healthcare system naturally by making this shift.
So what would that mean? I'm thinking about somebody listening who might not have won the social determinants of health lottery. Is there anything we can do as individuals if we're not sitting in the luxury of privilege? Is there anything under our control, or the ways that we can look after health even if we haven't won the lottery?
I believe so. I mean, that's a complicated question. There's not an easy or simple answer to that, but that's a cop out. I won't say that. Mm-hmm. I totally understand where you're coming from, and I think it's difficult because none of this is, you know, there's no one answer. It's a very complex complicated system. We have to consider biology and genetics, early childhood development. These are very important factors as well. And so are personal choices, behaviors, and lifestyle. That's all important. So when we're talking about the social determinants, we're not saying we have to shift entirely to only focusing on that. It's really the looking at the big picture, and all of these are pieces of that pie, of that big picture.
Okay, so let's talk about the big picture, because I think when we're talking about our health, we can become really focused and perhaps bogged down just focusing on our own health. Do you think that we as individuals need to maybe reach past that to consider the group at large?
I believe so. And that is where this sort of Activate Health concept was kind of born from. And I really think that not every single person can do something specifically to change the healthcare system, but I think that we need to start with the conversations. We need to start sort of with provoking thoughts and then leading to generative conversation about what that means. And using our own voices, using our vote where we can, to really try to put an emphasis on public health and population health. And of course, not at the expense of individual health. I too have had some challenges, and I get it. It's important. We need a good acute care system. But I do think that the starting place for us, because it's not easy, it's not going to happen overnight, but I think that the starting place is exactly what the three of us are doing right now. We're having a really, what I think is a really important conversation, and it's sort of starting to raise awareness about this and getting people talking about it, getting people thinking about it, and just thinking about, I wonder if, you know, we could prevent this X or Y. There are a lot of preventable illnesses that we still have a very high disease burden of. And you mentioned actually David Patrick earlier. And so David and I have been working together for many years now. And one of the projects that we are actually working on is a research project with David, and he is leading some work that has started to show a correlation between antibiotic use in infancy and asthma in adulthood. And so I think we also need to start putting the investments into research like that to understand what are the tools and the things that we can do to prevent certain things.
Yeah, that would be a fascinating study. I would love to know the results of that. Do you guys have anything cooking over there at the Foundation for helping movers and shakers to help get this well care system off the ground? I'm thinking of a grant or for instance, for a pelvic health physiotherapist who might like to educate teens about their bodies and how they work to help them promote pelvic health across their lifetimes. Maybe that person would like to apply for a grant to get a little help getting their program off the ground. Is there anything like that at the Foundation?
There isn't at this point, but it's interesting that you bring that up, because actually last year, so before we sort of got sidelined, so the world got sidelined by COVID-19, we were starting to have some conversations about some of the work or some of the initiatives that we might want to take on as the Foundation. And because the interesting thing about us is that we fund public health, but we also do public health. And so we were really interested in some youth programming and sort of coming at that, like, how can we set people up for the healthiest life that they can have? So we don't have anything like that right now, but that really is a capacity thing for us. And I would just say, stay tuned as we grow, because, you know, all of this, starting this conversation, isn't for me as far as I want to go. I would love to be able to start to offer more public health initiatives from the Foundation. We did last year, we ran an anti-stigma campaign around the overdose crisis and really trying to raise awareness of about stigma and why it is, well, it's costing lives, quite frankly. So work like that is really important to me. So I love that you're bringing this up. I wish I could say yes.
That's all right. We're planting seeds.
You are.
Christy, from your perspective, what are the things that are most impactful in changing the story of our health outcomes?
So that's a good question too. I mean, my background, my passion really is health promotion. And like I said, the core of that really is equity. So I think that to truly shift our health landscape, we need to focus on addressing health inequities, and we need to take a social justice lens to our work.
Well, you've said before, and even just today, that upstream thinking will shift our current primary focus on the acute care system toward an investment in stopping problems before they need to be fixed, resulting in a reduction in the burden on our healthcare system and thereby improving it in the process. So let's talk about upstream actions. What are those?
So upstream actions, and I realize it's a little bit jargony, but what it really means is addressing the root causes of issues and focusing on things before they become a problem. So let's see, a good example for me, and I think you mentioned housing earlier. So this is one of my sort of passion areas, because I also on a board of another nonprofit called McLaren Housing Society, and we provide housing for people living with HIV, AIDS, who are at risk of homelessness or experiencing homelessness. So housing for me is kind of a passion as well. And an example of an upstream action would be the housing first model. And what that really means is providing housing to somebody before, they have, telling them, you have to get your substance use under control, or you have to have a job, or you have to have all of that, and then we'll provide housing. Housing first means that you give somebody housing, and it's not connected to sort of whether they use substances or have a job or anything like that. And evidence really shows that that improves health outcomes. And we have this expectation that people need to be healthy and do everything right before we will do something to help them. And to me, that's just completely backwards. You know, in Vancouver, well, and not just in Vancouver, but we have a major homelessness problem that we need to address. And I believe that we can address it. And I think that that's, a pretty clear and understandable example of an upstream action that we could take.
Absolutely. And we see it on the streets, and we see it here in Vancouver every day.
So then, Christy, what about prevention? What does prevention look like?
That's a biggie.
Okay. I envision education. Like, I feel like you prevent things by helping people understand how to do that. It's a biggie, isn't it? Like, how do you do that? What about vaccinations? That's probably under prevention.
Absolutely. Vaccination would be a very well-known example of prevention. We can see with vaccine hesitancy how that actually impacts things. There's been measles outbreaks in the last couple of years. And so vaccination is a very, very important part of prevention. But there's also, the project that I was just talking about with Dr. Patrick, if the evidence does show that antibiotic use in infancy contributes to asthma rates, then there's a way that we can create a prevention program that would be probably directed a lot at physicians, not prescribing. So that's one example. A really great example right now, I guess, is if we look at COVID-19, all of the sort of preventative health measures that we are taking, let's say masks, for example, which is one of our layers of protection, is prevention, that we are trying to prevent spread of the virus. And so there's a lot of different, I guess, layers or levels of prevention that we could talk about.
These also, they overlap with one another. Like, health promotion is preventing things, health, certain sequelae from going on in a human. It just looks like there's a lot of, I just had the idea, there's a lot of, these are concepts and there's a lot of overlap in how a certain action might play out.
Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of overlap. Yeah, we're sort of, they're not concepts that work or function in isolation. They're interconnected. There's, you know, intersections across all of them. And we need to use the different tactics that are most appropriate and applicable to specific situations. And with COVID-19, of course, we're trying to prevent spread. We're trying to protect people. But then when people are sick, of course, we're trying to treat them and save lives. So that sort of runs kind of the whole spectrum of why we need all of it. And another good example, we talk about, we actually had a guest blog post written by one of our BCCDC experts around injury prevention. And I don't know that people think a lot about, you know, that road safety is public health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, reducing speeds, that's prevention. And I can speak to that from a very personal perspective. I was in a bad car crash a number of years ago, and it was because somebody was speeding. And if we had more sort of emphasis on prevention and in, you know, and that is one specific example, then maybe that wouldn't have happened to me.
100%. And I can tell you that there is data definitely linking severity of, you know, injuries within a motor vehicle accident to speed of vehicle at the time. Of the accident occurred. If there are lower speeds, there are lesser injuries. And I know that that seems like a bit of a duh, but good research is often like a clinical duh. It's like, well, of course. You've said that health is created outside the healthcare system. Tell us more about that.
So I guess the way that I am thinking when I say that is that the healthcare system is a system. Health is not a system. So while we, of course, need access to good care and services, that's very important, our health is not created within that system. It's created elsewhere. The healthcare system takes care of us when we're sick or we're injured, but it isn't really structured in a way that it takes care of our health and wellness. And so the way I see it is that health is a resource. The healthcare system is a resource, but they aren't the same resource. So creating good, positive health isn't actually tied to our current healthcare system. That system is a safety net, and it's a very important one, but our health is really shaped by the world around us. So everything that I've mentioned or talked about, or we've talked about at the foundation, social determinants, equity, social justice, this is where I believe that our focus should be. And this is where I think that true positive health actually lives.
Christy, how can people, the public, organizations that might be interested, how can they contribute to the Foundation for Public Health? How can we help you?
I'm so glad you asked that. So the BCCDC Foundation for Public Health puts evidence into action on some of BC's most pressing health. Public health issues like we're seeing today, but we can't do it alone. We need help. We need support, and really, you know, that can be a donation, which would be phenomenal. And we have our two main campaigns right now, our COVID-19 Emergency Response Fund, which really goes to supporting very important research and activities to help us get through this global pandemic. And our other core campaign is addressing the overdose crisis through a program called Compassion, Inclusion, and Engagement. And what that is a program where we provide grants and funding to peers, so people with lived or living experience of substance use, to form harm reduction services, overdose prevention services, and anti-stigma work in local communities. So it's a very grassroots campaign. And the peers are the experts in this work. And so we're really trying to support peers across the province. And so those are kind of our two main campaigns right now. We do a lot of other work, but that's kind of where the important work is for me right now. Considering our capacity, we do have to focus, and these are the two key priorities for us. So if someone wants to contribute with a donation, that's wonderful. If someone wants to engage with us on social media, that's wonderful. Sign up for our newsletter, share our content. we can't have events right now, or well, we could virtually if we wanted to do that, but attend events when we can or when we're able to do that again. There's lots of ways to get involved. And I think the Activate Health campaign is really that kind of battle cry to engage individuals and the public in taking some of this on themselves and becoming health ambassadors in their own community. And the Decoding Public Health series that I talked about, you know, read it, share it, think about it, all of that. And, you know, we're here. The core of our work is people. I have this vision of the healthy human, creating a system, a society where we strive to have the healthy human. And maybe that sounds a little bit idealistic, but I think it's achievable. And so, you know, we're here. We're here for people. We're passionate and we're committed to our work to improve public health.
Christy, before we let you go, you alluded to directions that you'd like to take the province related to health. Can you give us a sneak peek about the kind of direction you want to move in?
I think it's going to be a lot of work. It's a long road, but I think we're starting. We're starting here. We're starting with conversations like this and talking about the social determinants and health promotion. And we really need to start really digging into health inequities. And I think that is going to be a really, really important part of shifting our health system and how we view health. And, you know, we're seeing with COVID-19, of course, the importance of public health awareness, public health investment, and public health leadership. With Dr. Bonnie Henry at the helm of leading the province through this pandemic and doing a phenomenal job, as far as I'm concerned, I think the public are really starting to understand the importance of this. And so what that ultimately, I believe, is going to mean is shifting the sort of the allocation of investment and funding in our healthcare system so that we invest in and prioritize prevention and health promotion and really, really focusing on addressing health inequities. And again, this is not at the expense of the acute care system. I think we will enhance the acute care system by doing this work and by shifting and flipping some of the ways that we do health in our province around.
All right. That's an amazing goal. And I look forward to the days when we get there. Not that we ever arrive, but you know what I mean. We're reaching the point in the show now where we ask a question of all our guests. And I have to admit, I'm particularly excited to hear your answer today, Christy. According to you, what is health?
So this is a fascinating and difficult question, but let me just try and sort of articulate my view on what health is. So I think the way we view health currently as a society is very black and white. You're sick or you're not sick. This is going to sound maybe like a bit of a goofy way to describe it, but I see it as more of a rainbow. Like a broad spectrum that encompasses all the factors and all the prerequisites, you know, shelter, food, safety, you know, all of those things that we need. And none of those things live in isolation. So I also see health, I tend to look at it more on a population level, because if we can do all the things that I've talked about and that we're talking about right now, and again, recognizing none of this is easy, it's all very complex, I think we will create a healthier society. And that means that we as individuals will also have better health and better health outcomes. So health to me is situated very much in the context of our environment, of where we live, work, and play. As I mentioned before, I see it as a holistic concept and an absolute fundamental human right.
I love this. I just took a nice deep breath into all of that.
Yeah, exactly. Christy, thank you so much for coming on the show today and answering all of our questions, my questions about the social determinants of health, the ways that we can all improve our health fortune and the future of the crucial organization of the Foundation for Public Health.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Like I said, I love talking about this. Anytime you want to talk about it, happy to dig into it. And I really appreciate being welcomed onto your show today.
It was definitely our pleasure. That is all for today's small conversation. We hope that you enjoyed it as much as we did. We will provide links to the BC CDC Foundation in the show notes, including their social media, their website, whatever platforms we can find.
And we'll be here next time.
And we'll have the coffee on. If you liked what you heard, we encourage you to head on over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. Better yet, subscribe and leave a review. That really helps to make it easier for others to find us, to help broaden this small conversation.